If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
118. Can you believe we've done 118? I think you've been here for the last 20, maybe?
Ish, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually called this, titled this episode after a quote from Thomas Paine. So I'm becoming more political as I as I talk about my favorite things, which is technology. And so this episode is Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death.
Okay.
But Matt and I are here. We're going to talk today about two things. We're going to talk about, and it's really three, but two of them go together, and that's digital transformation and social innovation. You see a lot of these references, particularly in the media, around the tech industry, talking about digital transformation. But you don't see a whole lot about, in the United States, about this concept of social innovation. So just to set this up, digital transformation refers to the changes associated with the application of digital technology in all aspects of human society. Digital transformation may be thought of as a third stage of embracing digital technologies, which the first stage is digital competence, the second stage is digital literacy, and then now finally digital transformation. And that's the definition from Wikipedia. And social innovation are new strategies, concepts, ideas, and organizations that meet the social needs of different elements, which can be from working conditions and education to community development and health. They extend and strengthen civil society. That's also from Wikipedia's definition. Now, when you talk about social innovation and digital transformation and social innovation and tech, what you're talking about are technologies that are supposed to strengthen civil society. So it's a lot of the Internet of Things type of things. So, you know, smart meters, traffic cameras.
Two things I already hate.
Exactly. So, you know, the idea is that these things... And it's a very European and Asian concept where they don't really live in real democracies. They live under socialism to a large part. Because concept of social innovation when it comes to technology, a good example is Great Britain and all their CCTV cameras. You know, the idea is that these CCTV cameras make things safer. In reality, they don't really catch that many. For the investment that, as a country, that they have put into it, they don't really catch that much crime with it.
It's good for investigations after the fact, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no predictive value in that. And if there were, would that turn us into Minority Report, and I'm against that as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that in digital transformation... It's kind of the same thing. So, you know, when you talk about technologies, particularly civil technologies, that go into how do I want to say this? Digital technologies that affect the way we automate, optimize, simplify government. And functions that the government provides, which includes police work, fire work, you know, the fire departments, you know, these civil agencies that from the local level all the way to the federal national level. So you have this issue of, it sounds great because it'll help society. It makes things easier, and I look at social innovation and the application of technologies and digital transformation into social innovation as like the progressive agenda. you know, people believe that we should have more government because government makes it easy. Yeah, it is the easy button because you're just pushing the buck to somebody else. But at the end of the day, does it really work? Does it help? And I think a good example of that, is, and we have it here in southwestern Ohio, are traffic cameras.
Plus, yeah, just to back up a moment before we get into traffic cameras, which, you know, is a big aggravation for me, but the task itself did not become easier. The responsibility for obtaining the objective of the task has been made easier because we've passed the buck to someone else. To me, a truly innovative technology makes the task easier.
Yes. And that's the whole idea. It should be the task becomes more automated, but the application and the analysis of what it's going to resolve pretty much should not change. Because that's the issue. So going into traffic cameras, because it's a great example. So the idea is that law enforcement, I don't have to keep a police officer on, you know, sitting in an intersection that where we have people who run red lights or we have a overabundance of accidents at a certain intersection. You know, so now we can capture this. So, but what do we really capture? We capture license plates that if they run the red light, it triggers a sensor. But does that tell me whether or not there was... It takes the human element out of it. It takes the judgment and the ability to... So it actually breaks a tenet of why we broke off from England.
Yeah.
Which is because it assumes you're guilty before you're proven innocent. As assuming, you know, you have to, instead of being proven guilty, because there's a reason yellow lights exist. And there are actually legitimate reasons why you can run a red light. If you're in the intersection when it turns red, you have the right of way. But a traffic camera doesn't see that because you're in the intersection when it turned red.
And now you're expected to remember that when you get the ticket in the mail 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, but I only have so much RAM in my head, and I guarantee you it's not filled with my traffic pattern for
yeah,
the last
well,
2 weeks.
And the other thing is, you know, the concept is that in reality, lawmakers, you know, the local lawmakers who want to put these in, they know that this is a revenue-generating tool for their community. But then you have to ask, well, why is the local government a revenue-generating tool?
Well, because all things government is oiled by money. I mean, that's...
Well, I know, but I mean... You know, the concept, it's just like hospitals, you know. Hospitals should not be revenue generating. In reality, they should be nonprofit organizations. But see, again, we have a technology that's actually taking your civil liberties away, and people are kind of, or sheeple, as I like to call them, are just kind of following along, going, well, you know... It makes it easier, so, and it hasn't affected me yet, so it's okay.
That's the bigger part of the human equation. It hasn't affected me yet. And I think, you know, as these technologies start to become woven into the fabric of our everyday lives, we're going to find that it's not easier. And there are things that are far more complex than what the technology is really designed to handle.
Absolutely. Well, the problem with just the traffic light technology is it's binary. It's on or off, yes or no, guilty or innocent. There's none of this in the middle. Well, there was, you know, there was justified cause to do this, you know, and you know, the other issue is it's a traffic ticket. If you go in and you bungle it, it's actually going to cost you more because they're going to make you pay court costs and things like that. And they know that. That's the way traffic tickets work.
Well, it's gotten to the point now where they even take that same approach when the cop pulls you over for speeding.
Mm-hmm.
he gives you the option of going to the court's website, pay it online, pay the little extra little court cost plus the ticket, and it's done. Yeah. That's the way it's done now. It's become, how convenient can we make this, and not necessarily truth.
Yeah. And but let's move on from traffic cameras as part of this digital transformation. And there's a company out there, they just changed their name because they merged some of their subsidiaries and sister companies, because they're a subsidiary of a bigger company together, and they have a solution for, and they sell it. It's a security solution, and it's also, they sell it to law enforcement at the local, federal, and state levels. And it's really, I mean, from a technologist kind of point of view, it's like, this is really cool. But it is a, it, for you as a local businessman, or you as a homeowner or property owner, you can buy these cameras that they make. They're 4K cameras. They don't cost that much. They're internet connected. And those cameras, you know, report to the security company that you pay a service for. And then that company also sells the security service to local, state, and federal law enforcement. And so those guys then all of a sudden get access to these, the security feeds. And so some of it actually is, I would say, is beneficial. Like if you're in a big city, one of the things it detects is that these cameras have microphones and they have software that's able to do gunshot analysis and tell you and give law enforcement a gunshot alert. What it thinks is you know, shots were fired, and it's able, because the cameras are close by and there's other cameras, it'll do radio triangulation and it'll go, in this area, we have a gunshot fired alert. That is pretty innocuous. The other thing that's interesting about the system is that, so say somebody does rob a residence or a business or whatever, and they go out, and maybe that that business doesn't have cameras, but they do, and they can follow this person down the street. I mean, that's actually a pretty good use of this technology. But on the flip side, that could be used for so many wrong things. So what happens if the gunshot detection is wrong? Say it was a car backfiring. Because in many ways, that could sound the same and would show up as the same during analysis. Supposedly, they can do this, but I don't believe that it's 100% foolproof. That they can tell that, you know, that their analysis software can tell the difference between a gunshot and a backfire.
I have no problems with the technology being used in this way until, instead of sending a human law enforcement officer, they send the drone in and just lay waste, which is...
Well, I don't think that's going to be the issue. I think probably a more pressing issue, going back to the whole revenue generation thing, is so say they get gunshot detection and they go out and they find out it was something else. And so then, you know, because the law enforcement's going to, you know, they have to write a report, so they're going to get all the details to find out who the people were who were there, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, when they were finally able to determine via camera that, oh, it was license plate, blah, 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 and that guy gets a notice in the mail saying, hey, you know, you need to pay for us dispatching police officers because your car backfired on the street, you know, on this date. You know.
Which is furthers the traffic light camera problem.
Yes.
I mean, really.
But you know, so I actually see these as the bigger issues than the authoritarian type. I mean,
don't get me wrong. I'm bothered by the money.
Yeah.
I'm bothered by the need for the money.
And I'll tell you why I say this. Yes, this technology, if put in the wrong hands, and you know, if the NSA got a hold of it, then by God, which they have it,
yeah,
you're being monitored just like CCTV and buy it. But there are lawyers and civil liberties groups who have money behind them who are fighting those types of things.
But they're losing those
battles. They are.
You know, that's the...
But the thing that's going to affect the local guy the most is the revenue generation.
Well, yeah. Until he stumbles into something bigger.
Correct.
Which is inevitable.
Yep.
Because once these guys get started, they don't... There are no boundaries.
Yeah. Well, but the, you know, and the other issue is this. Even if they follow the legal process with a lot of these technologies, so smart meters could even come into this. Say you're accused of doing something, and as punitive action, a judge, you know, awards a warrant and says that we're going to cut off all their electrical services or all their water services, you know, over some civil matter. As opposed to a criminal matter.
I think that's kind of egregious. I would find that...
But that's where those technologies can lead.
Well, yeah. That goes back, put it back in the car.
Yeah.
They're developing those technologies where they can just turn your car off.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's the same sort of thing. If I'm taking my wife to the hospital and I'm speeding and going through red lights, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
You turn my car off, we're going to tangle when we do stop.
Well, you know, and that's kind of funny thing is people don't realize how some of this is insidiously, you know, come through.
Right.
But how long has the OnStar service existed? People buy a car with OnStar and it's convenient. You call OnStar with your subscription. Hey, can you give me directions to here, or can you connect me to so-and-so? I need to talk to them, you know, because they now allow you to essentially use it as a cell phone in your car.
Yeah.
And, but what they don't realize, way back, so we're going to bring up, so the OJ, when he was running, and they actually used OnStar to turn the engine off on his car. Well, they attempted to use OnStar. I don't know if it was totally successful. But there's been many of those where you see there's YouTube videos, there's some shows that talk about that, where they use the OnStar service to turn their vehicles off so that they can't go anywhere, you know. I mean, what they show is it's great when it's criminals, but wait, what if it's somebody who politically disagrees? So now they become...
These things become slippery slopes. I mean, that's kind of the point that I've been trying to make over a series of these podcasts is the technology is great. It can do wonderful things. It can make life so much easier when it's applied properly. Problem is that there used to be a time in this country when the private sector was truly private. And the government sector was truly government.
Yeah.
It's gotten so gray. Corporations now highly influence government, and government certainly highly influences corporations in the private sector. It's not as clear a separation as it once was.
Yeah, or should be.
Or should be, I guess it's probably the... I imagine that gray space has always been there. It just hasn't been quite as defined. I don't know. I love my technology, but I think on the other hand, there are ways it can be abused.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of like I am a user of Apple's HomeKit technologies. You know, I have lights that are automated that I can turn on with my phone, or I can use Siri to turn on and off, or we can use the Apple TV to turn on and off. But that's about as far as I'll go with it. I am not going to put in a automated, you know, internet-connected keypad lock system on my house because, I you know, in a former life, I know how easy it is to crack some of those systems, you know, and, you know, come home and they lock you out of your house, or they let themselves in. You get home, and there's nothing in your house.
Which brings me to the Amazon key story. Did you see that?
Oh, yes.
And what's your take on that?
So, you know, it's kind of funny. Almost all these systems that are out there that are AppKit also work with Alexa, also work with Google Home, and so they support multiple technologies. And so, you know, some of those, like, particularly when you get into home automation, there's Zigbee and there's X10, I think. I don't remember. It's that one's really old. That's been around since the 90s, late 90s, you know, for doing home automation. And a lot of those were never designed to be secure. And but like Alexa and Google Home support a lot of these non-secure, whereas at the HomeKit from Apple, they kind of started from the point of it has to be secure. So it's like hubless, where all of these use hub. So I'm getting to this.
Okay.
So, you know, the Google key or the Amazon key and the integration with Alexis and, you know, the dots, the Echo dots and the Echoes and all those other things, I'm really wary of, just because you have a, essentially have a Kmart creating and selling technology, and it has not proven that it is completely secure.
My problem with it is that it generates a code, a key, that works for 5 minutes. That gets you in. What gets you out? I mean, what says you got 5 minutes, the clock is ticking, or we're sending in the SWAT team or the drones? You know, I've not heard the, I've heard the get in. I've not heard the get the hell out. You know, there's no.
So a lot of those technologies aren't at the point where they're integrated with the, you know.
But you know where that's going. Yeah,
but you could easily do that. If somebody hacked it together today, you could do it. I mean, I have, one of the technology companies I work with, they have a they have an Amazon Echo using Alexis demo that they do, where they provision storage and virtual machines via Alexa. They say, I need 100 virtual machines, blah, 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 blah. Well, that's because there's an API out there to do that. So it shouldn't be hard to do the same thing and have it, you know, notify your security company, which security company can then go, never, don't unlock these doors, you know. The funny thing is, a lot of this stuff is, to a large degree, it's meaningless. I mean, having locks on your doors, you know why we have locks on our home doors? For insurance purposes.
Well, yeah.
If somebody really wanted to get in your house to take something,
but that's
they
like,
could get in.
That's every other guy. That's the anti Second Amendment argument.
Yes, but I'm also saying, but if anybody wanted to leave your house under the same thing,
sure.
Whether or not they could open that lock, they could get out.
So, well, yeah, you break a window.
Yeah,
you
know, break it, open it, kick the screen out. You're whatever. Out. Yeah.
I would be much more willing to go along with the Amazon key thing if it opened a doggy door. You could slide the package in and be done.
Yes,
I'm much more willing to open my door and gain entry to my home. Amazon's a great company. I love them to death.
I'm not letting them in my
house. I'm not letting them in my house. You can ring my doorbell.
Yeah. That's why I have the big, giant dog out front that the mail lady and UPS guys are all afraid of.
My dog isn't scaring anybody. She's barking, but she's not scaring anybody.
You need 120-pound Great Pyrenees out there, man.
Well, we had a massive pit bull mastiff for a while, and
yeah, they'll keep people away.
They do keep people away. That they do. Yeah.
But that being said, you know,
another point, though. You have a big dog.
Yeah.
You have a package coming from Amazon. Is there a technology that's going to keep the dog from chewing up the guy? No. Exactly. You know, I mean, is there technology on the horizon that could maybe do that? I don't know. Maybe the drone could come in, stun the dog, and then let the dog. You know what I'm saying? It's not.
Yeah, but then the ASPCA would.
That's what I'm saying. Then PETA's on my case. Yeah. And, you know.
Well, you know, the other issue is this. So Amazon's just taken it. They've taken a concept that actually makes a lot of sense. So, you know, the whole idea with a lot of these automatic door locks that, you know, are connected to your home system. And so, like, I see here with my phone, my kids locked out of the house. I could, you know, give them a code that they could put in, you know, that would last 5 minutes and they can get in the house. Or I have relatives or friends coming to visit and we're not home yet. And I can give them a temporary key to get them in the house so that they can get comfortable. That's where that technology came out of. But look at where it's already progressed. If Amazon's talking about, oh, you know, let our delivery guy come in and put your packages in your house.
See, but it starts with that stuff.
Well, exactly.
And then it becomes the warrantless SWAT team coming because your cow had flatulence and now you're causing global warming, and so now the SWAT team's got to show up and take care of you.
Yeah.
I demonstrate absurdity by being absurd. It's an old Rush Limbaugh thing, but that's where we're headed.
Exactly. So, you know, it's but think of this even from what so it starts out with, hey, it's a convenient way to let Amazon drop your packages off where they're safe. Well, then it becomes them taking inventory of what you have in your house, and they do targeted ads, and they...
it's insidious.
Yeah.
You thought it was bad on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, we noticed you had a broken spoon in your sink. Here's the spoon that would replace that, you know, kind of thing.
I don't need that.
No. That's the absurdity that Max Headroom predicted.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I love that show.
Yeah. Every day, because I subscribe to television services online that do not have any commercials. So I go to other places or I'm sitting in, you know, at BW3s or somewhere like that where they have TVs on. Commercials come on and it drives me nuts. And the commercials go by so fast now because they're trying to fit so many commercials in that they're almost like the blipverts that they had on Max Headroom, you know, that caused people's heads to explode.
Which sounds crazy, but here we are talking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Well, the other thing that I think is so strange is television advertising is not the way, other than around holidays, do you see technology companies actually, you know, companies that actually make stuff advertise on TV anymore. During the day, the people who advertise on TV are drug companies and political people. And that's it, because their target audience must be only elderly folks.
Everyone else has to work.
Yeah.
I mean, let's your typical average American family of four with a white picket fence and the 2.5 kids, both parents are working. They're gone during the day. The kids are off at school.
Well, the half the kids is special needs because he's half a kid.
Well, there you go. The dog's watching, you know, Animal Planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's it.
Is that what your dogs do?
That's Cameron influenced. My 15-year-old stepson will come in the house. He'll turn on the TV to Animal Planet and go into his room, get on his computer, leaving the TV on, and the dog just sits there.
That's scary.
There you go. Is what it is.
So let's move on. I think we kind of beat that. And the next topic that I really wanted to talk about kind of relates to this to a large degree. But the the hurricane that we had recently, I was over at my father's this morning, and, you know, I he had the TV on, so the news was actually on for it, and it wasn't something I was reading online. And, you know, they were saying, well, 30 days later, you know, over 90% of Puerto Rico still does not have power. And that kind of plays into what I've, my personal beliefs are, because we talk about as a country this whole concept of energy independence. And I'm going to give you the definition for that, too. So energy independence is an independence autarky regarding energy resources, energy supply, or energy generation by the energy industry. So when you hear it on the news and they talk about energy independence, what they're really talking about is the U.S. generating their own power, you know, or we're not buying foreign oil, that kind of stuff. I believe in personal energy independence, which I created a definition. It's the personal independence or autarky regarding energy resources, energy supply, and or energy generation by individuals. And really what this is so, you know, there is a clear and present danger going on. And that is one of the key targets of warfare going forward is going to be your energy grid. Because, again, it's an ancient industry that was, from a technology perspective, was not very regulated. And so there's a lot of unsecure networks, computer systems, electronic controls, digital controls, that will cost billions to fix. And so, it is probably one of the greatest real threats we have as an attack plane from our enemies. It's probably a much greater threat than North Korea shooting a missile over the ocean and it actually reaching the United States, which evidently, because I haven't watched the latest 60 Minutes, it's on the DVR, they talked about them. Well, they now have the ability to do this. So. Our missile interception system is only 55% good. I'm like, yeah, I'm not quite sure that 60 Minutes would have been told classified information like that.
My guess is that's probably the most recent numbers that were allowed to be released.
Yeah.
From a counter-intel perspective, that just seems...
But that being said... You know, the technology has gotten so much better. You know, in just the last 4 or 5 years, we went from 11 or 12% efficient solar cells to 15 to 17% solar cells and being affordable. I mean, 11% solar cells are so dirt cheap now, it's incredible. And the 15 to 17 are very close behind being that much cost. And we have 20 to 25. And as they become more efficient and more efficient, even if they could only get to 35 or 40% efficiency, you're talking about the cost for energy generation versus the cost of what it, you know, the infrastructure to support it is going to be very low. Now, that's not what the states and the energy lobbyists and energy companies want you to do, is go off the grid, you know, go off their grid, you know, so that's why you have stupid things like, I used to think it was cool. You know, hey, you put solar on your house and the federal government would give you a big rebate and it would allow your power meter to spin backwards because you'd be feeding the grid. And I'm like, well, why am I feeding the grid? I don't want to be part of the grid because guess what? You have solar power and you're feeding the grid. If the power goes out, your power still goes out.
Yep.
Regardless of whether you have solar or not. That is just saving you money on your annual power bill.
And truth be told, they've gotten to the point where I know you talk about decentralization of the energy grid, and that's really what the idea is here that we're talking about. It's the one industry in this country that is communist.
Absolutely,
it's the way we deal with.
Yeah, you pay what you pay because you don't get a choice in energy provider. They talk about giving you choice. Hey, you can get your energy through, you know, this other provider in another state even, But yet it still has to pass through the infrastructure that your current energy provider owns. So there's no savings because they just put riders on everything to say, well, this is the energy transfer cost, and this is the it is absolutely correct. It is a monopoly in the market, and unfortunately, in that kind of model, I don't see how that you could really have energy choice anyway, because you'd have to have competing infrastructures on the same power poles and everything else.
Which you can have that argument. Is this industry, this infrastructure, such a national security priority that it should be under the auspices of the government? And if so, why not have the government buy out the private companies and let's just go full commie?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if that's what we're going to do in practice,
yeah.
Why put that thin veil of...
I agree. But energy independence, personal energy independence, it is not beyond people's means today to move their house off of the grid.
Particularly if you take a look at the tiny house movement.
Well, you have the tiny house movement. Farmhouses, unless you lived on a huge estate, most farmhouses are 1,800 square feet or less. I could easily, you know, with a major investment in, and when I say major investment, maybe $30,000, $40,000, I could easily make my farm totally energy independent. And it would be easier for me than somebody in the neighborhood. But even in the neighborhood, with the advent technologies of the solar shingles, you hear about Elon Musk's company who does it. You know, the company that he was part of that he then bought out and brought under Tesla and everything. But there were companies who were doing solar shingles. They do dimensional solar shingles, and you don't even have to reshingle your entire roof. You can reshingle just sections of your roof on your house, because I had been was looking at that 10 years ago, when I was, you know, the whole idea of, hey, feed energy back to the grid, you know, my meter spins backwards, that kind of thing. But, you know, on a farm, I have barns and outbuildings and stuff, and I can put more power. The other thing that adds to it is Tesla's battery, that whole idea of the battery for your home. Instead of connecting it to the grid and providing you power if something went out, or providing power or cold storage, essentially, for the grid, when they have energy abundance, you know, to cover when they're short on energy generation, use that battery to act as cold storage for when you have a problem, like, you know,
it's dark.
Yeah.
Or storming.
Yeah.
For days.
And, but there are companies out there, and I'm actually, we'll have the links in the show notes for this, but there's a company that I've invested in quite a bit of their equipment, because we use it when we camp, we use it when we're doing horse shows and things like that, but a company called Goal Zero, and they make what they call solar generators, and they sell very, very efficient and very, very affordable solar panels, and they have, they're big in the tiny house movement. As a matter of fact, a Goal Zero, they have 3,000 and 4,000 watt solar generators. And when I say solar generator, it is a battery box with the charge controller and everything built into it, and your inverters. So it has 12 volt out, like in your car. Mm-hmm. It has USB out. It has AC connections out, and they have three or four models that can power a full-size refrigerator for 2 days.
Wow.
On one charge.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and that's without charging it. And right. It also has a charge adapter, and you can charge it in your house. That's what we do. We keep them plugged in, so it keeps them charged. That way, if power goes out, and they have LED, really, really nice LED lights that have the lumen ratings, and this is what we use for camping, that plug into them, and, you know, will light your tents or light your camp area and everything else. They also now just came out with a power transfer switch, so you could plug it into your house, one of the bigger ones into your house, and you know, isolate some circuits, and just like your gasoline generator. But, you know, for it's like $199 and you can get a 200-watt solar panel. And you can chain as many of these as you want together. And you can have multiple. We have two of the, their solar generators are called Yetis, which is kind of funny because it's before the Yeti cooler. Yeah. But it's a Goal Zero Yeti. We own two of them. And we own some of the small units, but I'm going to invest in one of the big units. And they work great. And they thought of everything because they were part of the tiny house movement. And they have a lot of videos about people using them in their tiny houses or using them in their... People have bought, you know, like vans and converted them into campers that they live in as they go place to place. And you know, they have the solar panels mounted on the top and they have a Yeti inside and all the LED lights. If you go to their website, they have some, it's really interesting to look at. And you look at this technology, you go, you know, I could apply this to my house fairly easily. Even if just for a backup, I live out in the country. Our power goes out all the time. You know, we have idiots who've... I've actually had somebody crash into the bump pole that carries the power over to my side of the street that then connects to my house.
Yeah.
And so we were out of power for like 2 or 3 days while we were waiting for stupid Duke Energy to bring a new bump pole out. You know? And I say this, this is the next step. We'll never be able to completely decentralize everything, but like individual homeowners should be able to decentralize their power. It would think about it, depending on how old your system is, how efficient it is, it would totally change the real estate market.
It really would.
You know, we've already kind of decentralized the phone system in the world because we everybody carries around a Star Trek communicator now. And, you know, if I'm unhappy with Verizon today, I can go to AT&T, you know, and switch, or I can go to Sprint and switch, or I can go to, you know, various other carriers, even though most of them are mobile virtual network operators. So we won't even go into that whole concept. But, you know, there's choice. And where there's competition, you know, the consumers... benefit. But in the case of energy generation, where there's little competition, nobody benefits. You know, it's kind of like cable companies. That's the other utility. But you don't have to... cable companies, unfortunately, TV is no longer a thing that the cable companies have to worry about. Now they're internet service providers, and there is competition in the internet service provider market. Because you're competing against all the cell phone companies, you're competing against, you know, the DSL guys, and you're competing against fiber optic, and, you know, there's choice. Again, it benefits the customer or the consumer. It does not benefit, but this whole idea of power generation, you know, as a centralized communist authority. does
we laugh about that, but that's really the only way you could describe it.
You know, and everything. And if you really think about it, if we would go that route, particularly on starting with new construction, there's whole new industries and new jobs that would flourish across the country just because of that. Because that's the one thing. If you build houses, you have a job, or you're a carpenter who specializes in construction. You have a job everywhere. So if you decentralized power and it became personal, you know, every building had their own power generation capabilities, you would have all these businesses and people who would specialize in that who would go do that.
What's truly unfortunate is it's going to take a nationwide catastrophe, almost extinction level event, in order to get our politicians to understand this concept and why it's important to our national security. By centralizing our power grid, what we've done is let our vulnerability.
Let's take this two more steps. So one, Matt brought this up when we were going through the show notes before talking, getting, you know, actually recording the show, and he's like, "So what about urban areas? Because urban areas can be a lot different because people." People typically don't own, they rent. So how do they do that?
But it's still in their best interest too. So
But you know, if you're the property owner, it's in your best interest to generate all the electricity for that building. Right. You know, and it, actually, that investment's much easier to swallow because, you, one, you're not paying for it. It's whoever's renting from you is paying for it.
Right.
And, you know, it will be paid back $1,000 for it. But so we cover that area, you know, where, say, in an urban area, it is every building has it. And, you know, there might be some places where there has to be some traditional, like, if you have a large public transit system that requires a ton of energy generated, they would have to have their own energy generation system for that. But again, it's a subway. I think we can probably run power lines through there for their own energy generation system. But let's take that and apply it to things that have happened. So we look at, even though it's been a while now, we look at the hurricanes, Hurricane Katrina and what it did to New Orleans and the whole Gulf Coast. And we look at this last hurricane and what's happened in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is a great example. 30 days after the hurricane, 90% of their country does not have power. The company they awarded to put the grid back together, they're going to cancel their award. I think they're giving them the 30 days now, or they gave it to them yesterday.
Was this not the company that had two employees and was based out of like Minnesota or something? And
yeah, so they were too small to do the work. Yet they've already done evidently done $10 million worth of repairs.
Yeah,
and so they're canceling that. So again, you're going to elongate this process. But if all those buildings had been energy independent, it wouldn't have wiped all the power out for all the buildings, and it would have been much easier to restore, because not only could people do it themselves, but companies could come in to help, and you would actually get building by building by building. So, you know, you could start out and you would see it grow, and it would not be this thing where, well, until the grid is finished, everybody's out of power, so I can't bring anything back up, you know.
Well, I think you bring up an interesting point in that when you have personal energy independence, you have the ability to make those repairs yourself. Or hire to bring somebody in.
Exactly.
You don't have that option when you're relying on the grid.
Yeah.
And
you know, and I bring up solar because solar is becoming so cheap, it's ubiquitous. But you know what else is cheap? Wind power too.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that earlier.
You know,
too.
You can go down to Menards, and for our listeners who don't live in an area where you have Menards is like taking Home Depot, Barnes and Nobles, Lowe's, and Fry's Electronics minus the computer parts and putting them together in a one big giant superstore for home improvement. You can go and you can buy solar panels and solar charge controllers at Menards today. They also sell, and it's hilarious because I've almost bought one just because I want one. They sell it, they're made by Coleman, but they sell 400 watt windmills, you know, windmill generators.
Right.
And they sell them in the store. They keep them stocked. You don't think about 400 watts, but if you're using LED bulbs and stuff, 400 watts is quite a bit of power. You know, most homes, my home would be an exception because we're running all the outbuildings and everything off the same power. But and I also have a lot of computer equipment that runs that most people would never have. But, you know, most homes could probably run off 6,000 or 7,000 watts. You know, the biggest consumer in your home is your dryer and your if you have an electric stove and your refrigerator. And if you can cover that, you're good.
Well, I mean, I've been thinking about building we have a big spot out back that used to have our swimming pool in, and we took the swimming pool out, so we got this nice crop circle. And so I was considering building like a pergola or something, you know, something out there that, you know, would just, you know, be a structure that's kind of open-sided. We could put the grill out there and, you know, maybe move a mini fridge out there or, you know, run some lights and, you know, it's not going to take a whole lot of power.
No, not at all.
That's the sort of project that I would think would be ideal for this sort of thing.
Well, and, you know, it's kind of funny. again, I encourage everybody to go out to Goal Zero and watch. They have a thing about living the life. And there's one where a couple lives up in the wilderness up north somewhere in a yurt. And the yurt's actually pretty big. But they use two Goal Zero generators that are chained, because Goal Zero is kind of cool. Their generators can be chained together to provide longer battery life, and also gives you the ability to have, if you don't want to wire your inverter into your house, it gives you the ability to have more plugs, you know, plug stuff in.
Right.
And you, these couples living quite comfortably, you know.
I'm telling you, it's entirely doable. The only thing that really prevents that from going mainstream, I think, is government.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many stories have you seen where somebody was living off the grid and some local idiot comes by and, you know, starts a whole court case as to whether or not they can do that?
Or how about new construction requires that you have to build a home at least 1,500 square feet. Well, what if you don't need 1,500 square feet? You know? You know, it's really interesting, you know, what some of these city building codes are, and it's like, this doesn't make any sense.
And I would, at some point, you have to decide, who would you rather take on, the federal government or your local city hall?
Exactly.
I mean, because let's face it, city hall is typically every bit as corrupt, if not more, than the federal government.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
saying something.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is saying something. But, you know, it's an interesting concept to think about. And, you know, and I think it's something that people need to move for. Personal energy independence, I think you could get away with. Because you could turn off all the power at your house and run a grid on the inside of it. It would not be hard and still have connection to your main power company. And your power meter wouldn't be spinning. You know, so it's not like you're going to get a bill.
I've always said that when I see those cases, you know, why not connect a single light bulb to the outside grid?
Yeah.
It's not that big a deal.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of funny because
I do like it as a backup. I like it in case there's a major emergency. You've got a centralized system that can be used as a backup.
Yeah. Well, and right now that's what we use our system for. It's our Goal Zero system is the backup along with a guy.
I'm saying switch it.
But switch it. Yeah, exactly. So then you can use the grid as your backup. But the issue, and it's kind of funny, it would be a self-fulfilling promise because it would end up decentralizing the grid while still having a grid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Plus, then I think we started this conversation with a description of the infrastructure as being aged and unregulated.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily mind the unregulated part. I mind the fact that the power companies, because they're centralized planning commie organization, they've not been forced to have to maintain the infrastructure.
Well, I mean, a good example is around here and in northern Kentucky and central Kentucky, and you get all through Ohio and Indiana, where Duke Energy, and although you get above northern or Warren County in Ohio, and it's whatever replaced Dayton Power and Light, American Power Systems or whatever they're called.
I just pay the bills.
I don't have them. So.
I don't even read them anymore.
But it was kind of funny. When we used to live in the subdivision, we lived on the street we lived on. We actually lived right on the Montgomery County, Warren County border. So we lived eight houses north of the Warren County border. Anybody south of the Warren County border had Duke Energy. Everybody north had Dayton Power and Light. Well, when we had the hurricane, the derecho, that came through from Alabama, and knocked down a third of the trees in our county. It tore roofs off the house. I mean, it was major damage. People were without power in the Midwest for a couple weeks because they had sent everybody to North Carolina to help fix the power grid that they thought the hurricane was going to hit. And then couldn't get them back because we couldn't, there was no gasoline because gas pumps weren't running. You know, there were tanks full under the ground. Gas stations couldn't power them. But
it was after that event that a lot of the companies, I know the company that I was working for at the time, started doing disaster recovery plans.
Yeah.
And that's why stop there.
Yeah, exactly. But going back through that, so, I mean, this is just the difference between, I mean, how the grid. So DP&L in Montgomery County has buried most of the power lines. Duke Energy has not. So they're still on poles. They're ugly. I think they're eyesores. And that's the reason why where I live out in the country, we have so many issues. Because, you know, you get a strong wind and it blows a little branch out of the tree. The tree comes down and hits the power line and it knocks power out. Well, during this hurricane, we lived just north, so we had DP&L, and one of our neighbors was a VP at DP&L, and our power was turned back on in about 16 hours. My mother-in-law, who lives across the street from where we currently live, did not have power for 2.5 weeks. Okay? And why is that? Well, because there was a lot less damage to DP&L's power grid than there was to Duke's, because Duke wouldn't bury their power lines under the.
Didn't hurt that you had a VP for DP&L.
It did not. It did not. But if it had been major infrastructure damage that required running new lines and putting up new poles and everything, which is what happened with Duke, they wouldn't have gotten this power back on any sooner.
But you know, the thing that's interesting about the streetcar in Cincinnati,
yeah,
is one of the things that Duke Energy was wanting to charge Hamilton County for was to dig to put those lines in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they're starting to realize the fallacy of their
system. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you call Duke Energy and you say, complain, why haven't you done this? They'll tell you, well, we don't want to, you know, incur the cost of putting all those in the ground. And they claim that, well, it makes it easier to repair and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but it would be less repair work ever. Because there's less chance of somebody knocking a pole down, natural disaster knocking a pole down, you know. It's time for some of these things to start happening on a large scale.
But again, the reason why they're able to get away with that is that there isn't a Cincinnati Power and Light that's giving them competition, that's doing things the right way.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's economics 101.
Exactly.
I mean,
no, absolutely.
It really is.
Absolutely. Well, I think we've beat these horses to death. They're laying on the ground, huffing and puffing, and may not get up again until Matt and I beat them again.
And we will.
Yes. So we want to hear from you, our listener. So please send us some feedback at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or visit our website. Leave a comment at www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.